This is the Business's Mission podcast. Business's Mission. I'm Gaia Boyd, your host.
The transition from living for God to living with Him. It's not complicated, but it's life-changing.
Listeners, here we are again, and we talk again this time together. Last episode, 2 weeks ago, Bill and I had a more in-depth talk about hearing the voice of the Lord. And this time we want to go into, okay, we felt or we sensed God guided us in a certain direction, but it didn't quite happen what we expected. So, Bill, welcome. We are looking forward to this talk.
Hi, Gay. It's great to see you again and wonderful to be back together.
Yes. So, Bill, you know, I'm looking at you, you know, with all the life's wisdom and your walk with the Lord. And, you know, it must have happened over the years that you thought this is of the Lord and it turned out really different.
That is true, Gaia. And just as a disclaimer, can I say to everybody, I think I get this right about 5% of the time.
Okay.
And I think probably 95% of the time, I may not be as on target as I hoped to be. So I just want to lay that out and try to clear the air and take some pressure off for having the right answers all the time. Yeah, there's lots of times it doesn't turn out the way you expect, or I just was inaccurate in what I thought the Lord was saying. I'm dealing with a situation right now where something looked so good, I didn't even ask Him if I should do it. It just was, I made the assumption automatically, oh, this is the Lord's answer to this situation. This is fantastic. And then a year later, I look at it and go, well, hang on, maybe this wasn't the answer because this isn't turning out the way that I expected it to be. And then in this case, I had about four prophetic friends that speak to me and they all said, I think you kind of made a change that you shouldn't have made earlier, you know, a year ago. And so I'm realizing, well, there I go. I missed it again myself. Again, just want everybody to know that this is an ongoing development that we're all in the process of. And nobody gets it right 100% of the time. But the good news is it's very easy to get back on track. Just repent and get back. And you may need to, you know, clean up a mess or two that you made. But if you do that, then you're immediately right back on the target that you want to be on.
As I hear you talking, Bill, I noticed that you are relaxed about it. You know, it seems sometimes to me, I meet these people, or I can be in a situation myself. No, not so often. I'm kind of a quick decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes people, yeah, I really have to make sure that I need to go left or right. I really need to wait. And I can imagine, you know, for some decisions, maybe the one you want to marry or whatever, you might want to wait a bit. But sometimes I'm thinking, you know, maybe I kind of go with, well, Lord, I actually remember when we joined Mercy Ships and we were just married 2 or 3 years, and we felt a call to go into missions, but we didn't feel a clear guidance. And I remember we went to a weekend to some elderly people, you know, what in our, you know, we were beginning 20s to some mature Christians. We were a weekend spent with them. And I remember coming back and Menno and I, my husband and I, we were both disappointed. They talked about Mercy Ships again. You know, for us, that was so natural. Of course, we were living on ships and we were shipping people. So, of course, they would. But it didn't seem the voice of the Lord. You know, it's like, yeah, of course, people talk to us about. But then we became so discontent that we didn't hear God clearly. I mean, in our minds, that we're like, well, maybe we can take steps. And God is God enough that He can close doors. So let's trust, if it's not of the Lord, that He closes doors. How is that with you? Do you always kind of wait till you know sure? Or is it each time different?
I think it's different. It's pretty organic. It's kind of an actual relationship. And so things are living and moving and shifting all the time. But the security is that His personality is so good. He is never going to do anything to hurt me. And I have a chance of being a player in the big game of the kingdom. So that's got some risk to it, but it's also got the adventure to it. And I just, more than anything else, I want to be available to him for what he wants to do. So I've already surrendered my life when he informed me that I was not just a metaphorical slave, but I was a true slave because he bought me with a true price, the quantity of his blood. And so I surrendered to him. I belong to him. He can do anything with me that he wants to do. So we kind of got that out of the way. And everything else seems to get a little bit easier after you deal with self.
To interrupt you, what I hear you saying is that you're totally committed to obedience if you really feel God is saying something. Is that what you're saying?
I want to be committed. I'm not sure I am, but I want to be. It's the logical position of a slave. He owns me. I'm his. I'm not my own. I've been bought with a price. But he is such a fascinating master that that's where the adventure begins. That's where the fun is. That's where the life is.
You
get to be drawn into this great thing.
As it is heavy burden slave, Bill, I must say.
No, that's all because of the master that owns me. It's the character of his life that he shares with us that gives us our life.
Because slave is a heavy word.
It has certainly a dark history. Yeah. And it would be me losing my identity to some other person who will be harmful to me and use me only for their purposes. But this all shifts when you recognize the character of the person who bought me. So if I remember and think of myself as being, as it says in scripture, we were rescued out of the kingdom of darkness. So I can imagine in the kingdom of darkness, there's a slave slave market where slaves are sold. And it's almost as though he reaches into the kingdom of darkness and he buys me out of darkness. And now he puts me into the kingdom of his beloved son, into the light. And he still says, okay, now just to let you know, you are my slave. I did buy you out of the darkness, but now you're in the kingdom of light. And there are things I would like you to do for me, with me. Are you okay with that? And so for many of us, it takes us a while to believe that that's really the invitation. But I said, yeah, anything you want.
It raises also a question to me. It's like you don't have a will anymore. You don't have desires anymore. You don't, you're... personality dying, kind of. Do you know what I mean?
I know that that's a fear, unfounded fear that many, many people have because of, I think, significant confusion on where they are already. If where I was on my own was nowhere, never. I was not getting very close to anything like life before I met him. But now that I know him and he's given me a new heart that we talked about on our last podcast, he gives me desires as well. So it's not like I have no desires. Now I have the right desires. So if I present my heart to him and I go, just tell me what you want me to want. Tell me what you would like for me to like to do and put those desires on my heart, then they actually get fulfilled as well. And so I could be a person with no possessions. One of the fascinating things to me about Jesus is, I think it's in Colossians, it says everything was made by him and for him and through him. But when he was living his life as Jesus 2,000 years ago, he had nothing. He didn't consider anything to be, you know, his own. He didn't have a home. He didn't have a place to lay his head. And I'm just thinking, what an interesting contrast between the fact that he actually created everything, but he's not owning it. He's not possessing it. And so as a slave, yeah, go ahead.
Bill, you know, I get ideas of, you know, when I would follow the Lord like that, I might be called like a Mother Teresa to live on the streets, have nothing anymore. And here, I know you have a real desire for airplanes. Mm-hmm. You got an airplane. Is that of the Lord?
Good question. I think the answer is, if I start with a neutral heart and say, Lord, would you put the desires on my heart that you want me to have? And then I get a desire to fly. And I think I look back and I've had that since I was probably 13 years old. But I didn't ever get a pilot's license until I was 65. And so I wasn't out there fulfilling it myself. And then in China, we had this really tough episode of redesigning an entire production line, essentially an entire company. And the Lord and I did it successfully in 8 weeks. And he said afterwards, hey, I want to give you a present. That was enjoyable to do that together. Do you still want to get your pilot's license? And I thought, how do you know that? I had buried that so far down, I hadn't allowed it to come back up. And then the next day, $15,000 unexpectedly shows up. And I go, Lord, is this money for that thing you were talking about yesterday? And he said, yeah. And so if you have a desire and he fulfills it, that's the way to be safe in all of these. I don't let my will go crazy after any thoughts I have. I go, oh, maybe the Lord has given me a thought of having a desire for something, then I'll wait until the Lord provides it. And so if you wait until the Lord provides it, then you feel much more like, okay, this airplane is on loan to me. I mean, even in the building process, he had quite a teaching opportunity. So we built it twice because the first time I built it, the quality wasn't good enough. And so he had it disassembled and we built it again. But the airplane feels like it's his. It's not mine. So I'm not driven by it. I'm not controlled by it, but I just get to enjoy it a lot. But I also get to, you'll see it's useful in sometimes ministering to some of my friends. Like a gentleman, his wife asked if I knew of any airplanes they could rent for cheap to get some hours built up. And I just said, Lord, do you want to loan him your airplane? And the answer was yes. And then there was a small accident in the airplane. And I remember just thinking, Lord, your airplane's been hurt. What do you think about that? And he goes, I'm fine. And I realized I can borrow his emotions to deal with his possessions. I have no right to be upset if something happens to his possessions rather than my own. And so I said to my friend, hey, it's going to be fine. My goal is that our relationship will be a lot better after this is fixed than it is right now. And it is their way. It's much better relationship. And I just feel like it's going to always be about people. But the way to manage my desires is, I think he's the world's best dad. I think he loves to give presents to his kids. But if it makes them spoiled or arrogant or distracted, it probably isn't going to serve his major purpose of using us in the kingdom for those purposes. So I feel like I want to be positioned, always available to him. But he gives me great presents, great gifts. My house was a gift. My car, I've been able to build two cars. The car I drive up for myself is this race car, is absolutely a kick. But if he wants me to give it away, I'll give it away today. So it doesn't control me.
But still, you know, when maybe it's my background in Europe, I know you love the churches here with all the saints who look very serious, like they suffered in the, and in the, a lot of the holy people, the saints in the church who did walk with the Lord, but there is this idea when we give our lives to the Lord that we are indeed slaves, that he is asking us to sacrifice.
Well, my experience is that I wasn't very good at sacrificing. What I mean by that is if I tried to, like in the early days, I felt like he was pleased if I suffered a little bit. That actually is much closer to other religions than it is to the actual gospel. But I would try to suffer by fasting for a couple of days or by giving, you know, all of my money. I'd empty my pockets out on Sunday nights at church and see if I could survive till Monday morning. And now the more I look back at it, I don't think suffering is his desire for us. I don't think it accomplishes very much. I don't know about the men and women of the past, and I think everybody needs to be put into their context to be properly understood. But while I was saying to someone the other day that I don't think that spiritual disciplines and suffering are the way to grow, but we do have to die. And so if we die to ourselves, like when he says, this is kind of simple. Just deny yourself. Take up your cross and let's go. That's the whole after conversion gospel right then. So it doesn't tell us necessarily how to get in, but it tells us how to live.
You frame it, Bill, that you say, yes, you have to die, but you frame it not in a kind of like, oh, now your life starts. I mean, I remember myself, you know, going to mercy ships. Actually, you know, my husband still really likes his butter, so he likes to put thick layers of butter on his bread. And I'm like, man, you know, here we were in my 20s, early 20s, going into the mission field. Now we go in the mission fields, you know, now life is going to be sober. and no more fun. I didn't say it that way, but that's what I believed. Maybe it's also because we came into mercy ships at that time, very early stages. Actually, it was so funny. You know what, Bill? There were bowls with butter and bowls with jam and peanut butter. And there were these tiny, we were in Greece at that time, these tiny Greece pieces of bread. And there were spoons in the butter and there were spoons in, Menno could be totally relaxed. Much on there. But I think that was maybe my Calvinistic idea of, okay, no more nice clothes anymore. No more, you know, I put up a bun in my head. And now I'm going to the mission field. I lay down my life for him and give up everything. So we were able to live on our savings the first 2 years. So we were very thrifty. Basically, we learned that God is, yeah. He wants to us to also enjoy life. He is, he's provided abundantly. So, yeah, but again, when I hear you talk, yes, he wants us to die so that we can have an abundant life.
Right. There's a little twist that I've discovered that helps. And so instead of me dying, I need to agree that I've already died. It's a lot simpler. Like if you take the book of Romans, I think, and just do a word search on died or death, there's some over 40 references to the fact that I've already died in Christ, that when he died, I died in him so that when he was raised, I could be raised in him and also raised with him. So if that's true, then I really just need to agree that that's already actually happened. I'm going to believe it. I'm going to agree with that. Then I can get on with my post-resurrection lifestyle in him. It's much more painless than people think it is.
So maybe that's another thing we believe, that when we, okay, now we enter into the kingdom and now we must die. While you say, let's believe the scriptures and say, when we step over this line, when we enter into this other world, we leave our old life behind us and he will enable us to live in the fullness. And
yes,
he will enable us to show us where we might still be walking in with stained glasses. I think I mean, the Lord keeps on teaching me and bringing me in fuller life in marriage, in, you know, in so many areas that I'm like, wow. And it seems like he has given, in the past, he's given the grace to think that I was pretty well. And then he shows something again. And then I'm like, shoot. There's so much more abundance still. Is
right.
Is how you experience it?
It is. I try to explain to people that I've learned more in the last 5 years about the kingdom and the life that comes from it than the previous 50 years.
That's so encouraging, Bill. You're 10 years ahead of me, so.
There's so much more to learn. That's right. Yes. We're not going to exhaust this understanding, and we keep making these discoveries. And the discoveries are part of the fun journey. I mean, it's just really helpful to be teachable and be willing to learn something I don't yet know, instead of being defensive of what I believe against all of the other versions of Christianity out there.
But Bill, you know what I realize? We are already 20 minutes, over 20 minutes in this podcast, and we promised our listeners what happens when you thought you heard the Lord and it didn't turn out that way, and we went way off track.
I apologize for contributing to that off-trackness. But can I share one story that we talked about previously that kind of led us in this direction of the oil fields?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I want to take a little license here. I may not have the details right, but I do have the general idea right. And so the story I heard was about someone who was in the oil drilling business, who had a good walk with the Lord and who could hear the voice of the Lord. And in their exploration, the Lord directed them to a specific location to drill. And so they I got the rights to drill there, moved all the equipment, and they drilled and drilled, and they never got oil. And so this person, I think, went back to the Lord to kind of get validation or clarification about, why did you send us here when there's no oil? And he says, oh, there is oil, but it's not in the ground, it's in the people. I was going after the people. And he was somewhat uncertain about what that meant. And then the Lord explained that I think there were four people on the drilling team who were all thinking of committing suicide. And the lifestyle of this person and maybe other believers that were there were so influential that they all came to the Lord to believe in the Lord. And the Lord was saying, I needed to put them on this dry land, but it wasn't to get the oil in the ground. It was really to get the value of the people that I put you around so that you could have this chance to demonstrate to them the life that I've given to you. And they all have now entered the kingdom, and they've walked away from that thought of suicide. But that's so classic to me of, it's always about the people that the Lord is interested in. It's never about, you know, the money or the other issues in businesses. It's always about the people.
But we still have some time, so let's not disappoint our listeners too much. Mm-hmm. What can bring us in the wrong way? Because there are examples of people who were really kind of clear, hey, this is what I felt God guiding me into. Look, I myself and my husband, I think we had like 3-4 years that we felt God guiding us, my husband actually, to be involved with the Messianic and with ships, and nothing happened. And it's another time in that same kind of period, I thought I would, with a group of people, start Youth with a Mission Rotterdam. Well, we had some good connections and we prayed together with a group. Nothing happened. There were several things like that. And I remember that I was like, I feel God is trustworthy. So what is my theology, or how do I see him? What does need to be corrected in my life? Because I think he is good, but why do we walk into these alleyways and bump against the door again and bump against another door again? And, you know, now I should have some clear answers. I don't have. Maybe a bit more that that it was after that what we called, we had our couch period, where that we're like, hey, we don't know. We just am in a period that we don't know. But during that period, God brought up a lot of deep down issues, you know, healing our hearts. You know, I think we came from a background where, like, you go for the Lord, you go for the Lord, you go for the Lord, you walk for the Lord, and here another project for the Lord. And I think here we came more, looking back, I felt God is like, I'm not going to open this door for you. You're running too fast. Who are you? Who are you? What's in there? What do you really feel? What do you really believe? So I think it was a period of cleaning, of pruning. And so I don't have the answers. I just know, yeah, it was a good time. And it was good that those doors closed. Yeah. So what do you hear me say, Bill? Do you have something that our listeners might be helpful for them?
What I hear, again, is something I can definitely relate to as well, is often we look for measurables in our life to validate that we're on the right track. And for those of us in ministry, will have ministry type of measurable. So there's some sort of measurable fruit that we can see out there. But if we look around us, we don't see that, then we get a little bit nervous that we may be on the wrong track because we're not seeing what we hope to be able to see.
Our friends,
I think, from the Lord. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think what the Lord may be trying to do is to preserve the relationship, which can be lost when we're busy with ministry. I had him actually tell me that I was so busy that the two of us had no time together at all. And I had no idea that he wanted time with me. And so he's so personable. And our individual relationships are so valuable that he may pull us out of activity just so that we can have time with him. We can rest, we can be restored, we can learn more about us and more about him and more about the relationship. But it won't seem, quote, profitable in ministry format. And that makes us nervous because it's much easier for us to get recognition from people for the activity that we do than recognition for him just from the relational investment that we're making. And so when I have those seasons that feels like it's not productive, then I've learned to ask, well, what about the relationship? Is it getting better or not? And if it's not, then I'll find out. You kind of know how to make the relationship better. It's basically spending time listening, being more concerned about his stuff than my stuff, you know, not using the relationship, but like really growing in it and resting in it. And for me, it's so embarrassing to realize, well, I was using him for quite a while in the beginning to make my life better. And then I transitioned over to surrendering to what he's got going on so that my life can be available to him because his agenda is much more important than mine. But that takes a while, you know, we'll say things. I've been noticing this about my belief sequencing. I'll say I believe something and then I listen to myself and I realize, but I'm not talking like I believe it. And then he's reminded me sometimes I'm not acting like I believe it. So we need to grab these identity things, these issues, and begin to talk like we actually believe it, and then act like we actually believe it. And then I think in the end, we will actually believe it.
But yeah, thank you for reflecting with me. And while I heard you talk, I'm like, yeah, I remember, you know, before we were so much more goal-oriented or, you know, like you say, do something, show something. And, you know, we had a background with mercy ships and that you could really show, you know, a ship,
sure.
Medical, Africa, you know, that everybody can understand, is impressed. And here in these years, we didn't have anything to impress people with. But it, you know, I'm so thankful looking back at those times that, you know, to go deeper and come more to, hey, who are we really? What do we really feel? What do we really think? So we are running out of time, Bill. So I hope we didn't disappoint our listeners too much. I mean, we didn't come up with clear answers like we usually don't do. They are, you know, the ones who listen more regularly. They know they don't get a 5-step to success or a 5-step to, you know, to avoid any mistakes in life, but to discover together how does this work. And like you say, every context is different, all our personalities are different. So is there something you, in closing, you like to share with our audience?
We've had this whole conversation and never mentioned once that there is an enemy actually trying to come against us as well. And so maybe that'll be another podcast. But I remember the feeling when I had this prophetic friend who was praying for me and they said, Bill, I just heard from the Lord that Satan himself has your name and knows about your assignment and that he's released some spirits to come against you. And I go, well, while you got him on the line, why don't you ask him what they are so I'll know what to look out for? And she asks and comes back and he says it's legion. So that's, I don't know, 5,000 or something. And it just felt like, okay, that's so far over the top that I'm not even going to respond to it because I have no idea what the response would be. But just to let our listeners know that the complexity widens out a little bit as well when we have that component added to it. And so we'll maybe be able to deal with that in a future podcast.
Yeah. I'm kind of a little bit stunned when I hear you say that. I would be, maybe my joy would drop a bit. You're smiling, Bill. But
yeah, it was like, okay, this is so far beyond me that I have no ability to respond to it. So I'm not going to worry about it. I mean, that was maybe not the best response, but I learned a lot in the first 10 years when we were over there.
Well, that will be something for another podcast, but just for our listeners to know that there is an enemy around who wants to, rob our joy and takes us off track. Well, thank you for this time again, Bill. And then we'll meet our audience again in 2 weeks' time, and we don't know yet if there will be a guest or if we continue to talk about the enemy, but we will come back in a future podcast on some of this in this area. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Gay, and thank you to all of our audience. We appreciate them so very much.